You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400. Or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
As I have an incredible guest this morning, Radio Rehab just seems to draw in the greatest people, and this guy is an amazing man that is responsible for protecting our community and takes that very seriously. But more than anything, he's authentic. I think of Eric Williams, and I think he's a person first and a politician second, and treats us all accordingly. So I'm very glad to have him at Radio Rehab today. Good morning, Eric.
Glad to be here. If the audience could see me, I'd be bright red right now. Thanks for that introduction.
Oh, it's very true. Listen, we were talking before the show that just about how you got involved in law enforcement, what that has meant to you. Do you see yourself as a police officer? What goes into being a sheriff? What kind of mindset?
It's a pretty broad topic. You know, I consider myself to be the luckiest person in the county right now. I've got the best job going. I feel blessed and very fortunate to have got to fulfill a dream. You know, every new policeman says someday they're going to be the chief or they're going to be the sheriff. But the reality is that doesn't happen to very many people. So to get to be sitting where I'm sitting today and be the sheriff of the organization in the county that I grew up in is just an incredible feeling. I feel like I can make a bigger difference than I might have been able to otherwise. I can paint with a broader brush, mm-hmm. and touch more people. I've got a lot more latitude to do the things that I think are important, the things that I think the people want me to think are important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very humbling. I love going and talking to groups and starting off by saying, I am your sheriff, and I'm the sheriff that you selected.
Yes.
And I hope I'm earning your respect and pride. And for those of you that didn't want me to be your sheriff or didn't pick me, I hope the next go around you'll have changed your mind because you've seen the way that I've done things and seen the professionalism that's exhibited by the sheriff's office and the people that work there.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm incredibly fortunate to have a wonderful team of people across the board, from the guys that are on the street and the girls that are out there, and to my clerical staff, to my investigators, to the corrections people in the jail and both the community corrections. I couldn't ask for a better team of people. It's easy to be the sheriff when you got good folks.
Yeah. What made you want to be a sheriff?
You know, I guess I was always fascinated with law enforcement. You know, I grew up watching Andy Griffith and Adam 12, and so I got a little older, started watching shows like Barney Miller, and I've always been fascinated with it. But I didn't go to college thinking that that's what I was going to really do. You know, I was going to figure I'd end up going to work for my family business here in town, or doing something else like that. But I got to be very good friends with a member of my fraternity who was a little older and was an alum and kind of hung out every once in a while, stopped to check on us as undergraduates to make sure we were doing okay. And he happened to be a deputy sheriff. And when he was on patrol, he'd stop by the fraternity house and write some reports and hang out. And I found myself always asking him lots of questions and wanting to know, you know, more about it. And finally, it came obvious to him and to me that I ought to give it a whirl. And so I did. I gave it a whirl, and I found that I loved what I was doing, that it was a great place to be. I thank him for it all the time. He and I, to this day, are best friends. So
one man had an influence in your whole career.
Yeah, he ended up being an incredible mentor to me. He's a very popular person in this community. He's done great things. Yeah, it was Sheriff Ellsworth, Congressman Ellsworth.
Yes.
He's a fraternity brother, but first and foremost, he's one of my best friends. And I always know that I can count on him to give good, sound advice. And so I feel very fortunate to be walking into a sheriff's office and working after having a mentor like that. That also understood the ideals of public service and taking care of your community first.
And you guys both do that and do it very well and with a lot of heart and a lot of good head, too. You got to have both, I guess.
They work in concert. You know,
yes.
I find myself struggling sometimes because my brain's telling me to do one thing, but my heart's telling me to do the other. And you have to weigh those out and think about what the community would want you to do, mm-hmm. and what they expect from you, and that it's the right thing. And we always talk about the three R's, doing the right thing at the right time for the right reason. Mm-hmm. And if you do that, hopefully it'll work out. If it doesn't, at least you know you tried to do the right thing.
Yeah, you don't have to look back. Well, I know Brad. I met Brad from, he was involved in DARE, and I worked at the Mulberry Center then in the Parkside program with teenagers that had substance abuse problems, and he was in the prevention end, DARE, and I was in the treatment end and the intervention end, and he and I did a lot of programs together. So I know substance abuse was something that was important to him to talk about.
Absolutely.
And I know it is you, too.
You know, I don't know how doing what I do for a career, substance abuse can't be important. When I just look at the jail population, mm-hmm. one of the fundamental things that you do as sheriff is run your county jail. And, you know, I would guess that probably 80 to 85% of the people that are in that facility today have some sort of substance abuse related issue, whether it be alcohol, drugs, or something else. Somehow substance abuse has put them there.
A root there.
You know, you talked about you being in the treatment end, mm-hmm. and we're kind of in the prevention end. You know, the sheriff's office can find itself easily in the prevention end.
Yes.
We find ourselves in the enforcement mode. And now we find ourselves in the treatment end also, now that we also have community corrections and those things, we're doing all of them. But I would like to think that prevention eventually will put treatment and enforcement out of business. You know, that's where I'd like to see us go.
And it probably does. I don't know if anybody's checked that out yet. Without those programs, oh my Lord, where would we be? Teen Power. If we didn't have a Teen Power, there'd literally be thousands of kids out there not knowing.
And that's why those programs like Youth Resources Teen Power are so important to me, because those are the kids that are getting ready to enter the stage in life where they're going to start making very critical decisions about.
And they're going to watch other people making not
peer
such
pressure big. is at its highest at that point in your life. It's very important for those young people to understand that there are choices to be made, and that there are choices that will lead them down the right path. Now, good choices don't always guarantee success.
Right.
And bad choices don't always guarantee that you're going to go to jail or something horrible is going to happen. But you have to understand that the likelihood in both directions is much, much greater. Good choices more often are going to get you in good positions, mm-hmm. and bad choices are going to find you in bad positions more often than not. And
how did you... I mean, you're a hot guy. You were probably very popular. How did you get through the roaring 20s and your young adult life without making bad choices around alcohol or drugs?
Well, to say that I didn't make bad choices would probably not be true.
Okay.
You know, there were probably some choices that I made that were less than good. But I was very fortunate that I had good people around me that helped make sure that I stayed on the right path. You know, I was a member of a college fraternity, and there was beer and alcohol present and marijuana and those kinds of things. I found myself probably drinking more than I should have in college from time to time, but it never became...
Didn't make your life unmanageable.
No, I was one of those people that just didn't really enjoy it all that much more often mm-hmm. than not, and I found myself when I did have a drink now and then, it was out of peer pressure, mm-hmm. and then it was what was available and what you did. But I always had good people around me that kept you, and that's what I got out of my fraternity experience, that it wasn't the animal house mentality all the time, that it was more often, how can we put our people in positions to succeed in school, you know, how can we get people connected with our community,
leadership,
how can we do
focus,
things, it was much more about that, and with that kind of mindset, I didn't go down that path.
What was the legal age when you were in college? See, it was 18 when I was.
It was still.
In college.
It was 21.
Was it 21?
Yeah.
Was there drunk driving laws yet?
Oh yeah, they're
that started out in the 80s, I guess. Yeah.
And we spent a lot of time. We had really good advisors in our fraternity, people that cared about us, that made sure that we were making good decisions, or at least we understood the poor decisions when we made them. In high school, I was probably considered a stick in the mud. You know, I wasn't a very outgoing person. I didn't do a lot of things, and so I ran with a pretty tight group of people. And we weren't in that party mode for the most part. You know, we went to them occasionally, and we saw those kinds of behavior. But mm-hmm. I really didn't get affected or influenced by the presence of alcohol and substance until I hit college. And I don't think that's true of most kids today.
No.
I think they're being pressured by it or seeing the effects of it much, much, much younger than I did.
And the pills.
The pills proliferation available. Of prescription medication that's
right.
available to young people that maybe some of those kids are taking for their own benefits but are turning around selling them to others. The amount of it that's in people's medicine chests at home and the strength and the dangers of those medicines, we see that much, much more frequently than people think.
Yeah, we do too. In the courts. So you went through your own phase of experimentation, and you said the main thing you think looking back that saved you was having good, positive support around you?
You know, having my family that I knew would be disappointed in me, that cared
about
me. And
that mattered to you.
And that mattered a great deal. You know, the thing that I grew up, I never really wanted to disappoint my parents. Mm-hmm. I always wanted to make them proud of me. Mm-hmm. But having good friends, you know, the people that you spend every day with, having them make good choices and having them telling you that's don't do that, dummy. That's not very smart. And not just in the area of drinking and those things, but also in going to class. You know, studying, making the most of your college opportunity, setting goals for yourself, and seeing to it that you get test your skills, put you into positions where you can see what you're good at and what you're not so good at, seeing if you can take leadership roles or what kind of challenges you're capable of facing. All that stuff happen to you helps keep you on the straight and narrow.
So what happens to the Eric Williams that have goals and have good friends and family, but yet start drinking or experimenting with marijuana and go left instead of right? What about those guys?
Well, a lot of them travel under the radar for an extended period of time. Their families fall apart. They don't succeed in their jobs, or their jobs fall apart on them. They're miserable, unhappy people. Mm-hmm. A lot of them do come up on the radar for law enforcement, and they end up finding themselves in jail. I take, for example, the drunk driver. Mm. Drunk driving is a horrible crime.
And you've had a few work for you that, unfortunately, great people.
Yes, we have. But, you know, you look at the drunk driver, and most of those people that I know that are habitual drunk drivers are not bad people.
Right.
They have families and friends that care dearly about them.
Yeah.
They may have had successful careers, but they've got issues with the alcohol.
Right.
And they continue to make these bad choices. Well, those bad choices eventually can cost them their lives, somebody else's life, and that's when it becomes, you know, extremely tragic.
Yeah.
But I see these guys that have been drunk drivers, and they're off the sauce for a while, and they're normal, good people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to succeed, but the alcohol gets the best of them, and they start making really, really horrifically poor choices, and people's lives are on the line.
Yeah.
You know, I look at the jail, you know, jail in a lot of cases is punishment. You know, just by design, it's punishment, whether you want it to be or not. Sitting in jail is not a good thing for anybody. But I look at it more as an opportunity for the community to protect itself from people that are making poor choices. You know, we're holding them in a place where they can't make poor choices anymore.
Right.
And the drunk driver is a classic case of that. You know, consistently are not making good choices, putting the community in jeopardy and themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we put them in jail until we can figure out what's best for them or what's best for the community and society, and guaranteeing that at least while they're there, they're not going to hurt anybody.
Right. And even their families, I've heard say, thank God I know where they are now.
We hear that all the time from families that, you know, are dealing with problems in their family.
Yes.
and individuals within their family that have ongoing issues that they will say just what you said. Well, at least I know where they're at. I know they're safe. I know they're going to be taken care of, and they're not going to hurt anybody or themselves. And that's unfortunate, but it's true.
And I know Judge Trockman is a good friend of yours, Judge Meyer. They think jail is a good place to use as an intervention to stop the progression of the alcoholism. Once they lose the choice and they're in the throes of their addiction again, the addiction's dictating, and jail's a great place to interrupt that.
Jail's a good place to break a cycle.
Right.
But jail's a very expensive place, and it's a very, very different kind of place. It's not a treatment facility. When you think about a county jail, we have everything in the county jail, from the person that didn't pay their child support, to the shoplifter, to the rapist, to the drunk driver, the murderer. They're all in the same building. They're all there together. And that group of people, it's not like we're dealing with one section of society that have similar problems.
Like addiction here,
theft
here.
It's not like that. So it is very, very difficult to provide any level of treatment in a jail. The other thing that people probably have a misconception about the jail is that you go to jail and you're there for a long time. You know, the Vandenberg County Jail will book roughly 11,000 some odd people this year in the jail that will transfer through there. But the average length of stay is just a hair over a day. They don't stay for very long. Most people churn through there. They get arrested, they post bond, they get back out. The people that stay more than about 72 hours, that average length of stay becomes roughly 3 months in that area. The best programs in the world don't happen in 3 months.
No. You're just getting the cobwebs out in 3 months.
There's very little that we can actually do long-term except for hold them and protect society while we have them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we have to take a break, Radio Rehab, so don't go away. We'll be back to talk to Sheriff Eric Williams in just a minute.
Hey, you. Yeah, you listening to the radio. It's me again. Have you got that HIV test yet? As I mentioned before, if you have put yourself at risk by having unprotected sex with more than one person or used IV drugs, guess what? You've put yourself at risk for HIV. Make that appointment today by calling the Vandenberg County Health Department at 435-5683 or stop by 420 East Mulberry. It's that easy. Remember, everything is confidential. No one has to know you've gotten the test unless you tell them, so do it. What do you have to lose except maybe your life or your partner's life? When in doubt, get checked out.
Real psoriasis sufferers get real results from Dermarest.
The psoriasis on my knees, the itchiness can drive you crazy. I have tried everything. Dermarest is the best product I have ever used.
Dermarest psoriasis provides complete relief, removing scales, letting healthy skin grow. And now Dermarest is improved with a unique zinc complex that moisturizes and reduces redness. Feel your best and look your best with Dermarest.
Hello, Dermarest. Goodbye, psoriasis.
Now you can get the furniture, appliances, electronics, and computers you really want and leave your money at home. Only with Rent-A-Center's free until February 7th event. It's brand name merchandise with no credit checks, no credit needed, and no money down. So forget your wallet and forget your purse. But don't forget, it's free until February 7th. Only at Rent-A-Center. We make it easy to make it your own. This is a rental purchase transaction. Offer ends February 7, 2009. Excludes TVs 37 inches or larger. See store for details.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Warwick County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400, or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab, and now here's Lisa Seif.
You know the old saying, attitude is more important than aptitude. And just in talking to Eric, and I've known him for a long time, what an incredible attitude he has. And it occurs to me he runs his team and his business like he runs his family, his partnership with his wife that he's crazy about, and just the way he is as a friend. He's consistent across the board. So I ask him the question. I want him to answer it for you. If this did happen to somebody he loved, if somebody ended up having a substance abuse problem, how he would deal with that?
Well, I think from my perspective, you know, unfortunately, and like so many other families, I've had occurrences of this in my family. You know, I've got members of my family that have made poor choices or have found themselves in substance abuse situations. Now, fortunately for me, I've not had to deal with that in my immediate family. I've got three children ranging in ages from 19, 12, and 3. In fact, you know, two of them are sitting outside the room right now entertaining each other, I hope. I hope they're not tearing the place up. And my oldest one's a sophomore in college. So I have the whole spectrum, and I'm hopeful that they make good choices. You know, I've spent my whole life talking to them about good choices. You know, they have to follow me around to when I go to things like this, and they have to hear my thoughts about what I talk about and talk about how choices are so important. I firmly believe that everybody sets their own destiny. They make choices.
At what age do you think that starts to?
Very early.
Don't go away, Eric. We have a call. Hold on. Yes, caller. Good morning.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
Just calling to say I love the show, and I think Eric is really a great representative to the community.
Well, thank you, caller. I think I know who this is. Hi, John.
Well, anyway, I really enjoy the program, and I think it's very helpful to a wide range of people throughout our community.
Well, it's nice to hear from you this morning. Thank you for the kind words.
Thank you.
Any questions for this wonderful sheriff?
I think he's covered the bases beautifully, and I think he paints a very good picture of what can happen if you get caught up in a problem.
Yes, definitely. Well, thank you very much.
You're most welcome. Bye-bye.
Have a great weekend.
So, you're well-loved, Eric. How do you handle that?
Well,
because you always have to worry about votes in your position too, but I don't think I've ever seen that be your guiding force.
I was a little nervous about this running for an office, but my dreams became I wanted to lead my agency. I had the fortune of being the chief deputy for Sheriff Ellsworth, so I was the second
That's
in
true.
Command. And I got to help build a team and set policy and direction and things like that. So I almost looked at it like I've been the assistant coach mm-hmm. for a long time and helped put together a team. And the coaching to the head coach's job opened up.
Bobby Knight, look out.
And so, I wanted to put my name in to help, to coach a team I helped put together and build. Mm. A team that I was incredibly proud of in a community I loved. But the only way to get that is when you're the sheriff is to run for election. And when you think about that, I encourage everybody to run for an office because you learn an awful lot about yourself and an awful lot about the people around you. But what better way to get a job like being the chief law enforcement officer, the chief safety keeper for your community, than ask the people to appoint you to that and go out and ask them one at a time, individually, through whatever means you can I do that for you? Do you trust me enough to do that? And to win an election like that. And the gentleman I ran against is a good guy, too. He could have done the job. I put myself in a position, and the people chose me. And that's very humbling. It's very honoring. But it's also very scary sometimes. I can remember January 1 when I took office, sitting at home thinking about, I really don't have a single boss anymore. I've always, my whole life, had somebody that I answered to, at the workplace. Now, obviously, I still answer to my family and my wife and God and those kinds of things, but I didn't have that boss day to day.
Wow, that's
nobody to say, here's your job today, this is what you're going to get done.
Yeah.
Instead, I've got roughly 172,000 bosses, which is, it's kind of a different kind of, it's very difficult to put your arms around that and think about that. And, being the sheriff of Vandenberg County is pretty small scale compared to the President of the United States. So I try to put myself in that position and think, man, what are they going through? Because I know what I went through just thinking about that.
Do you worry about what people think about you?
I think you have to worry about it. But I think if you know that you did what you believed to have been right and you tried to do what they thought was in their best interest, what I thought was in their best interest, that they're not always, not everybody's going to like you. That's just the way it is. Even if, even the people that like you get mad at you because you don't do it the way they wanted you to do it. The people that supported you aren't going to agree with everything that I do. But you hope that they look at the total package and everything we're doing and say that more often than not, things are going better than they're not, and that this is a good program and we want to see this continue. If you get reelected to the office, then great, people endorse you. And if you don't, then maybe it's time for somebody else to do it. I've loved getting to be the sheriff. I want to be able to do it again for another term. I'm going to run, and hopefully it works out. But if it doesn't, it doesn't. But it's an incredible experience to know that, like I said early on, I start off meetings and talks with, I'm honored to be your sheriff, and that's what I am.
Well, and I know at the Teen Power Camp, you always address the parents, and I think it's so powerful for the parents to hear from an adult that is a leader, the CEO of the community in that way, that you're willing to be real with these kids at the camp.
I get out there.
Real everywhere.
I know there's some YouTube video out there of me dancing and doing some silly things, and that's okay. Hopefully it doesn't show up at election time, but if it does,
it's awesome.
The Teen Power Camps, I go there because I think it's important for those kids to hear from me mm-hmm. and to know that I am a real person, but I have a lot of experiences and a lot of things to be able to share that they may not have otherwise have.
Uh-oh, we have another call.
Wow.
Hold that thought. You're popular. Yes, caller. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes,
good morning.
I just wanted to say I was listening to the broadcast coming in from work, and I do know Sheriff Williams, and I just wanted to say it's always good to hear him in an interview because Sheriff Williams is always saying the exact same thing, and I don't think the public realizes how much of a value this man is to the community, not only in the jail, but he's got so many programs there that he's put into place, and it's been a benefit for those who've been incarcerated. So I just want to say thank you to Sheriff Williams and to you for having me on your program.
Well, thank you,
Colin.
We love those kind of calls. Yeah, Eric. People kind of see you as the timeout parent. You look at jail as more timeout than their criminal losers. People get that about you. That's important.
Well, the jail is one of those places that nobody wants to, I mean, most people don't even want to know that it exists.
Yeah.
And most people, you know, I hear it all the time. Well, you know, they're bad guys. You know, stack them up, throw them in there, throw away the key, whatever. Well, you have to remember at the county jail, most of those people haven't been convicted yet. And I do believe in our system of government and that you are innocent until proven guilty. A court of law has determined that those people are better served in jail and as opposed out on the street until their trial. But while you're in there, you're still a person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my job is not to be the judge. That's for somebody else to do. My job is to make sure that the people inside the jail are safe and secure, that society is safe and secure from them, and that my employees come and go from work every day without getting hurt. You know, I look at that, and it is a strange place to work.
It sounds like the callers are saying that belief system of yours ripples all the way down to your employees. Do your employees treat the prisoners? I mean, do they go out and talk to the prisoners like you used to? Is there that relationship?
You know, I can't dictate how my people behave one-on-one.
Yeah.
But I think one of the most, here's what I told people when I was running for office. The single most important thing I can do as the sheriff is hire and retain good people.
Absolutely.
That's the most important thing I can do. Because most of the people I hire will be there long after I'm gone. And so that's really my legacy I'll leave behind is the quality of the people that I hired and how they operate that office.
Mm-hmm.
I look for people that I think treat people similarly to me. I don't want to find a whole bunch of people just like me because it'd be a miserable place then. we want a variety. But
yeah.
I want people to understand that these are people here. Their job is not to judge, not to punish. Their job is to run the jail, make sure that everything is done safely and securely, that nobody escapes, that nobody gets hurt, that the community's kept safe. I think those people are like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every once in a while you have some issues with somebody that steps over the line, but we're very quick to deal with that, try to provide remediation and training and get them back on path.
Wow.
You know, I guess I can't answer that. I like to believe
well,
they are, but
you're hiring them
I think that the public would be able to answer that, or the people that have had to spend time in the jail, the people that have visited the jail, they could answer that better than I could.
But I think it's even more interesting that you do so much more in the community than the jail. Is substance abuse, do you believe philosophically it is about choices, or do you believe once somebody gets addicted, that takes on a life of its own, and your job as just a human being is different than just locking them up?
You know, when substance abuse, somebody somewhere made a choice.
Right.
You know, I've yet to see
the buzz.
Yeah, I've yet to see somebody hold somebody down and inject them with drugs.
No.
That doesn't happen.
No one recovering would ever say that.
They've made a choice.
Absolutely. They like the
effect. But once they've made that choice, they now have chemical substances in their body that do impair their ability to choose further. And that's why the lecture is so important. To make that first choice properly. Don't ever get yourself in the position where you're making choices under the influence.
Mm-hmm.
I think that most people that are under the influence or that are substance abusers, there's hope for them.
But they
have to recognize that.
Absolutely.
You know, I run up against the brick wall through our community corrections programs time and time again with people that refuse the fact that they need the help.
Yeah, we see that too.
And I firmly believe that if you're wasting your time until somebody recognizes the fact that they need the help.
Yeah.
Once they're willing to embrace it and they realize their issues, I think the door's open then for recovery, for programming, rehabilitation,
and lots of support.
And leading very successful lives. You know, ultimately, I want people to be paying their taxes, being good citizens,
sure,
obeying the laws, holding down a job, taking care of their families. They're not doing that when they're under the influence or they're in our jail. That it's not happening. And when they're in those positions, they're costing the rest of us money that we could be putting towards educational programs, infrastructure programs, so many other things that our community could benefit from.
If one of your employees ends up with a substance abuse problem, do you encourage them to go to treatment? Do you keep them employed? How do you deal with an employee that
very much depends. We are in a law enforcement agency where we're tasked with keeping other people that have made bad choices. So we depend on our people to be a little beyond that and be making good choices.
Mm-hmm.
The difference would be the level of the problem that they've encountered, and how we find out about it. If an employee comes to me and says, I have a substance abuse problem, we have a policy that we will send them to employee assistance and we'll provide them with assistance and try to get them help and let them retain their job more often than not, depending on the problem.
How you find out about it.
If they've been out on the street corner selling drugs, no, we're probably going to end up putting them in jail. But if they've got a significant alcohol problem or a prescription drug problem that, they were on pain medications because they had some kind of surgery and they got themselves addicted and the medical field didn't do a good job of getting them back off of it, we'll work with them. But now if I find out as a course of a random drug test, pretty much you're done.
Yeah, we're that way in drug court too. If they come to us honestly, supports there.
Because that's a big part of the system is facing your own problems and letting us know about them. I'm there to help you if you come looking for the help. But if you wait until I find out about it, the trust is gone. And in a career and in a profession like what we do, trust is critical. We tell new deputies that come on, the only thing that they've got given to them when they come through the door is their integrity. Mm-hmm. Everybody assumes that it's at 100% when we pin a badge on you.
That's right.
And the only thing you can do is get rid of it. Through your behavior and your actions. Mm-hmm. And so, it's important to us that you're upfront with us.
Well, that sounds a lot like the drug court, too, where it's important to be honest. And even in recovery, any treatment program or AANA meeting, if you're not getting honest, nobody can help you.
Absolutely. We depend on that.
Yeah.
The community depends on
it. And you model it.
Yeah, the community depends on the sheriff's office and law enforcement and treatment people that are part of the government to be truthful and honest and be working to their best interest. And so for the organization to be like that, I depend on the members of that organization.